Welcome to Brian Roos Show. It's May the 2nd, 2018. My guest is Carolyn Yeager. She's been on four videos before. She's written many articles with the Barnes Review since 2007, and she's recently co-authored this book, The Artist and the Warlord, Not Hitler You've Never Known. We did four videos on that. But today, we're going to talk about Adolf Hitler's teachings on the nature of nature. So, Carolyn, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, well, thank you, Brian. I'm real happy to be here.
Yeah, when you thought of this topic, I thought, yeah, like Adolf Hitler and National Socialism was about natural law, natural order being harmony with nature. And I know Adolf Hitler and the Germans had like the first laws protecting animals' rights and things like that. So I really want to hear what you have to say on Hitler's teachings on the nature of nature.
Well, that just, it kind of came out that way when I was talking to you about it, and I thought that is a good way to put it, because it's also, yeah, it's about Hitler's spirituality, or there's, you know, always these questions about what did Hitler believe in, was Hitler spiritual, was he not spiritual, was he a pantheist, did he believe in pantheism, that's what the most people say, you know, that's people who are not Hitler friendly, like the translator of your Mein Kampf. I don't mean to be, no, that is considered a very good, correct translation, yeah. But still, I imagine he portrays Hitler as a pantheist, and particularly in the notes and stuff.
Yeah, this is an old 1971 book. It's split in two, and the book broke apart. Yeah.
Yeah, and well, now I've been, as I said before, and I've been putting on my website, carolynyager.net, that passages from this new translation of Mein Kampf by Thomas Dalton, and it's kind of inspired me to look at some of these issues again. And
yeah, mine's the Mannheim translation, yeah.
Right. Yours has been around for a long time. This is it's one of the first ones, if it wasn't, well, anyway. Not the first, but one of the first ones. And this one, as I was reading this section in chapter 4, and it had such interesting things in it. You know, I just put a lot of things together from it. And then I went on to the back, further back in the chapter 10 and 11 and found some more things. But there's not a whole lot in Mein Kampf that Hitler discusses this, but what he says is, to me, absolutely central to understanding him and his worldview. And that's the thing, Hitler had a worldview that was very comprehensive.
Yeah, I like to talk about his worldview and his spirituality. And very interesting.
That's that word that everybody knows, Weltanschauung, that word in German. That is almost like you don't have to consider it a German word because it's every language understands what it is. It's become so famous. And as they say, it expresses something that you can't really translate into another language. It's one of those German ways of thinking. But anyway, it's best translated as worldview. And that's, to me, now this is my interpretation of Adolf Hitler, and I really think, which is why I was interested in doing this show with you, Brian, because I really think I have a good understanding of Adolf Hitler. I really do, and the more
that's why I wanted you on the show too. That's why I keep inviting you back. Yeah.
Thank you. That's very kind. Because the more I read what other people say and all, I think they just don't really get it, you know, and they might not spend the time or be as interested as I am, but I've become even more focused on Hitler. I realize that because it's where we're going to find the answers to what we need to do as a people, in my opinion. So so this worldview that he had is kind of... It's very nature-centered, you know, and everybody knows that, you know, everybody understands it. he had this idea, and they call it the that he's a Darwinian, you know, the survival of the fittest, that he saw things in terms of natural law, and all that's true, but I don't know that he was a, well, he wouldn't have been, he wasn't anti-Darwin, so yeah, that was, so they kind of then say, well, he didn't have a religion, or he didn't believe in God, but he believed in nature, and all of that is doesn't really explain what he believed. And he in my opinion, it's hard to find the right words to really put it. Maybe it's because I don't know exactly what I could say that would not be maybe a little bit not fully accurate or something. But I'm just going to start with this rather than try to describe exactly what you would call his beliefs. His main interest was how to make the German nation, or race in quotes, stronger, better, more unified.
Yes.
Right?
I mean, yeah.
When people want to make him a universal godlike figure, which is, or an avatar, which I know you're getting involved in, and
You know about my Thule Society, and the kind of a spiritual interpretation of Hitler. I'm not saying he's God. I'm not going that far.
Yeah. No, right. Well, they don't, you know, he's an avatar is a representative with a special divine mission, right? Kind of a messenger with a divine mission, or above the, you know. Now, I think that it's understandable to see Hitler that way. He had a great mission,
yeah.
But it was his mission, or some mission given to him in the other world. You know, I don't like to go there, because I don't think he liked going there. He didn't want to go there.
Yeah, so he didn't. Yeah, I think he discouraged religious interpretations of him as Messiah. He was kind of against that. I guess as a politician, as a political leader, he wanted to downplay that, right?
Well, I think as a person too. Because it comes up in table talk
in places.
Well, he doesn't go for that. I read something just yesterday, I think it was, where somebody quoted him. Yeah, it was that that website, Hitlerian Hylozoics. There was a quote there where he was saying, and this is from table talk, that it just vexed him that if people didn't want to live in this world, and we're going to get into this now right away, if people who didn't want to live in this world, who wanted to somehow get out of this world, he didn't have any sympathy with that, and it vexed him that people didn't want to stay here and do, you know, participate and do what needed to be done. They wanted to get out of it. So, and I used to do a lot of that. I thought that was the way to go. And I know you've done that, and I'm not criticizing it. It's very, very valuable experiences. But what did happen with me was that as I became a better meditator and had really, I thought, amazing results, which I don't think are necessarily just unique to me. I think people can, you know, amazing results of information and channeling and all kinds of things that would just pan out and be so wise and wonderful, you know. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm good at this. But then a time came when I just didn't want to make that choice to go and leave, you know, or to be not here. Not that I wouldn't be physically here, but, you know, not to be engaged. And I got interested then, I think some things changed, and I got interested in history. Well, I got on the internet. It was the internet, really. If there wasn't the internet, I might have gone on with that. But the internet, I think the same thing with you, because look what you're doing here now. You're busy making hundreds of thousands or something of videos and so on.
It's the convenience of having it in your in your own home, the internet. I was too lazy to go out to the library to study stuff, so it really makes a difference if it's in your own home.
You know, the learning curve is so, and you can pick what you want, and this is what I picked. So, anyway, I'm not putting that down in Hitler. In Hitler's time, there was this interest in a kind of German occultism, and of course his party, his German Workers' Party was connected with the Thule Society, which was a kind of a occultist tending. It was German patriotism and occultism at the same time. I don't know.
Yeah, that's where we get our name from. Yeah, Thule Society. Yeah.
And so, but he separated the party from that when he took over, and everybody there wanted him to take over. They
won that. But I would say he didn't renounce it. He just separated. It's kind of like the Thule Society had done its function, right? The party came to got established. Yeah. It's not like he said it was a bad thing or renounced it.
Right, and there were people in the party who still had those inclinations, but he just didn't let it interfere, didn't let it become a part of the party, and so I've got, and naturally, as I always do, I got off the track there. I want to stay focused so I can get this clear. So his focus was on Germany and Germans, because, you know, let's just understand, he had been through the Great War and see how the German, like a couple of million German men died in that war, gave their lives. He had become a strong pro-German thinker for quite a number of years. And I just want to, my own theory is that, you know, he became an orphan at the age of 17, just barely 17, I think, and he didn't have a family, or he didn't relate to any other part of his family. They were kind of, you know, he didn't really know them, and then I think that he was even more inclined to identify as a German. That was what he loved, and what gave him an identity. And so as that developed, you know, he was very patriotic, and when he saw what happened at the end of the war, how Germany was tricked to surrender, lay down its arms, and then they were made to be at fault and given all these punishments that were really terrible. You know, this is the Versailles Treaty that was so devastating to Germany. It was a shock, such a shock to him. And that's when he decided that he had to try to correct that, try to help Germany and do something. And he became a politician. He decided.
He became inspired by the circumstances. So he rose to the occasion, right?
Right.
So he could have been an architect, who knows?
Yeah, right. So there, we've talked about all that. So there he was, how to help Germany, how to help the German race. What does Germany have to do to not only get out of the horrible situation they're in, but not let it happen again? And he came up with his worldview. And then at that time, he also met quite a number of people and through this German Workers' Party. And one of them was Dietrich Eckart, who was his mentor. And Eckart was an anti-Semite, and he taught Hitler about Jewish intrigue.
Yeah, I'm really inspired by Dietrich Eckart. He seems to have spiritually trained Hitler. He said he's opened up Hitler's centers of vision. I think of him as like the guru, you know. I always warms my heart just to think of Dietrich Eckart.
Yeah, well, Hitler certainly loved him.
He dedicated Mein Kampf to Dietrich Eckart.
Well, he talked about Dietrich Eckart in Table Talk and gave long stories about Dietrich Eckart in some parts of it, because he was so important to him. So there was, they had the idea that that the problem, one of the major problems Germans had and Germany had, was the Jews, because it was the Jews who were behind the stab in the back, you know, the inspiration of the labor unions and shutting down the war effort by their strikes they were having and so on, and causing all of that and bringing down the monarchy. And then they had that revolution in Bavaria that was successful for a while. The communists were in power and so on. It was really quite a lot of activity, you know, and changes and so on. So that was that became the enemy. So how, and I don't know how Hitler, of course, developed what you would call his spiritual ideas and about nature and so on, but he was very smart and he's looking for answers and he's going to come up with them. And I think he was right on target, you know, with what he came up with.
He seemed to be right on with everything else, right? So why wouldn't he be right on with nature?
Yeah, well, a lot of people would have these, could come up with these ideas maybe too. He wasn't the only one, I'm sure, but he was the one who was able to speak to the people and had the passion and the huge desire in him to get through to the people and put this message out, get people to understand it. So he wrote about this in Mein Kampf, and you know, I'll just say what he thought Germans needed was pride. They needed to have their pride restored. Mm-hmm. They needed to have get their confidence back. They needed to have their health and physical strength and endurance restored. They mm-hmm. needed to have a love of nation and race. That was very, very important, because he does have interesting talk about how Germans are it's so easy to make Germans not think highly of themselves, you know.
Yeah, like what they've been doing for the last century, right?
Yeah, and he blamed
them. Was it a chapter in Mein Kampf about nature?
Well, this part that I'm going to be talking about now, I'm going to quote some of it.
Yeah.
It's chapter 4, and in Dalton's book, mm-hmm. I got it here somewhere. It's 4.2, the four paths of German policy, somewhere in the early part of chapter 4.
Okay.
Very pages. He talks about the four paths of German policy, and it's amazing what's in there, because it's based on nature's wisdom. I have written down here that the German policy he's recommending is based on nature's wisdom. Those are my words. But let's see. He also saw, you know, he and his group and Eckert and the others saw that the Marxists were the mortal foes of all religion. He says that. So he was never a foe of religion. He was never against religion.
Yeah.
Only in table talk, by then, 42, 43, he got disgusted with the churches and their lack of support, which he had tried to work it all out with them in the beginning, but their lack of support and their obstructionism and so on. And
I thought Catholic Church did support Hitler, though.
They did.
Against communism.
In the beginning, they both churches did. But they, and the Catholic Church maybe still did in some ways, but some of the leaders of the church in Germany became difficult. Look at that leader now, that highest Catholic, I think he's a cardinal in Germany, Marx is his name, M-A-R-X. He is so liberal that it's just, and so anti-German and pro-foreigner, you know.
Well, that I think that's because the Catholic Church is controlled by Jews now. It's very different than during Hitler's time. You know, the Catholic Church really was the Catholic Church back then, right?
Hitler never had a problem with the Catholic Church, but he had a problem personally by the mid-40s with, or maybe during all the 40s, I don't know.
42, 43, yeah.
And with both churches, and wasn't, and had plans to make some changes after the war. A lot of things were going to be done after the war, but otherwise he never had a problem. He thought religion and the religions that were there were absolutely necessary for the German people. They were used to that, they needed that, and so on, and he wasn't going to interfere with it at all. But anyway, his own personal respect for nature comes along the lines of, in this section, he was discussing, actually, in this section of Mein Kampf, how to avoid calamity or starvation from the annual population growth, of 900,000 Germans a year. So at that time, this is 1925, he was dictating this. He was saying that the annual population growth of Germans was 900,000, and Germany was, you know, had a limited space, bigger then than it is now, though. And he's always looking forward. Now, to say he was a forward-looking thinker is an understatement.
Okay.
Wasn't he always projecting into the future, long term? You know, how is this going to work for us? Because his whole idea, and then he talked about his Reich being a 1,000-year Reich. That's the way he thought, he wanted Germany to be a great nation, and he thought that it deserved it. And then again, goes back to my idea that this took the place of his parents, you know, his family, his German family. And that made him such a lover of Germans and a supporter and a defender.
So emotionally, the German people were like his family. He wanted the best for his family in the long view, a 1,000-year Reich with the National Socialist Party caring for it for 1,000 years.
Right, exactly. He got it. It's like, I think that's right. It's a family feeling. And that's good, because so different from these leaders today who are just using the people and for short term,
he loved the German people, and they had such immense respect and love for him, and he had such respect for them. You could really feel that back and forth.
Right. So he didn't see himself as taking over the world or, wanting to rule over other people. He just wanted to be a German leader and help the Germans. That was his family, his people.
I say he cared about the Aryan race, cared about the whole world, he cared about other races as well. It's not like he was in conflict with the world, right?
No, not at all. In fact, he's as we go on, he's using the term Aryan a lot, you know. And in chapter 10 and 11, he starts using the term Aryan. But here in chapter 4, he's just talking about practical problems facing Germany, because he's back in business again. He's in prison, actually, but he doesn't know if he's going to be, get, you know, what's going to happen after he gets out. He thinks he's going to be in there for a long time. So, but he's still thinking about what should be done and the practical issues. So he says that there's four things. You can artificially restrict the number of births to deal with this not having enough food for a growing population. And he says that nature restricts births under bad conditions. You know, if things are a problem, or droughts or this or that, or people are starving, they might, you know, not, just the birth rate would naturally go down, you know. But he says when man is in charge, not nature, will try to restrict births through abortion, and that way he will try to keep alive the ones that are allowed to be born, no matter whether they're sickly or, you know, and, you know, have problems or not. No matter what's wrong, they try to keep them alive at any cost. And we know this is the leftist way of thinking. We're gonna let women have abortions all they want. But those children who are born, if there's something wrong with them, they're even more important. They're even more valuable to us. We have to take care of them.
Yeah, and it's a very sensitive issue, but you have to think about it logically and rationally. Yeah,
it is.
It's hard to talk about that. Yeah,
the crux here of one of them, of the problems that the world has with Adolf Hitler, because he's seen as a cruel and unfeeling man because they've got this goofy liberal ideas, which he says hurt the nations and the future generations and hurt everybody in the long run.
Yeah, there's YouTube videos actually from Germany at that time about medical doctors talking about the severely mentally retarded and what's the best thing for them or not, you know, and is life worth living for them. People can see this on YouTube. It's quite sensitive stuff.
And I want to bring up the Alfie Evans issue, which most people were very happy to say, oh, that terrible British National Health Service. They said he had to die. They weren't going to allow him to live. You know, we've had these issues come up every so often, you know. And I just say they were probably right, because supposedly this little boy had lost brain function, and he was just too, his body was unable to function on its own, and they wanted to just keep trying to save him. And they said it was in his best interest to be allowed to die. You know, I don't know everything. I don't know everything about it, but what I, based on the little I do know, I have to agree with them, because I don't think it's wise to spend the resources we do and on what would be called feeble or diseased individuals who were not born strong enough to survive. And words I've got took down here, I think this is from the passage, the natural struggle for existence, which allows only, natural means what nature does, which allows only healthy and strong individuals to survive, that's what I call natural selection, is replaced by a desire to save, and he puts that's in quotes, feeble and even diseased ones at any cost. Those might be my words. I may have written that in my words. But in any case, what Hitler says is nature may restrict births under bad conditions, but not man. What man does, well, I already said that in my own words. So there we go. Now there's, and so Hitler had all these programs, eugenics programs to improve the German race or nation, to improve because they had become subject to a lot of births by people who should never have been been allowing to add people to the population, the German population was filled with feeble-minded people and idiots and so on, and they were costing a whole lot of money, and not only that, they take up the attention of people, you know, of resources that should be used somewhere else.
Yeah.
It all sounds like, now people will say, oh, that's just what they accuse the Jews of. That's just thinking about money, putting money first. No, it's not putting money first. It's putting the good of the whole, the good of the community, the good of the nation first, rather than a single individual. And Hitler's idea of nature is that nature is totally unconcerned with individuals and doesn't care if they die off, that they have to if they're not able.
That's true enough. Yeah, nature is just not natural. Just that's the way nature works. It doesn't care.
Thinking of it's got a, according to Hitler and me, it's got a plan. I mean, it's got a, you know, it's not a, nature and God are not people who are thinking like we think or something, but the overall forward movement is to make people better and higher. This is where we're going to get into the higher man. And
intriguing how we want to up-level the German people. We don't see that in governments today. They're trying to dumb us down. It's the opposite.
Yeah,
the whole
I'm
idea
sure.
of trying to improve your people, that's really kind of an inspiring concept. You don't see that today.
Well, they say that's eugenics and that's evil because it leads to genocide. It doesn't lead to genocide. It doesn't. So that's a big lie.
Yeah, of course it's a big lie. Yeah.
Lies. But Unfortunately, and something that's really bothering me a lot is that people don't seem to be bright enough, and they are dumbing us down and making it worse. People are not bright enough to see through this, and they fall for all these emotional arguments, just like with Alfie Evans. They fall
Yeah,
for that.
you have a good point. Like, in a sense, we're losing to the international Jews that way. They brainwash the masses, and the brainwashes masses, they have the power of the vote, and da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, people don't see it. It's hard.
Right. Well, now, Hitler addresses all this right here in this little section here. He says, he says results that human beings, or the liberal philosophy of letting women, you know, abort as they will, and because so there wouldn't be too many people, and then trying to save every single birth after it's born at any, you know, at any cost, results in a human progeny that will become worse from one generation to another. Such a nation will eventually terminate its own existence. What Hitler's going to argue here is that the German policy should be to encourage births, to encourage as many births as possible, and let nature decide which ones survive and which don't.
Yeah, I can see the difference between the state and the family. The individual can say, the welfare mother can say, I'm going to have as many kids as I feel like. That's it, her individual feeling. But the state, like the Hitler is saying, the state should have something to say about it, because the state is going to have to deal with these future generations long after this mother has died. You know?
Right, and it is not just an economic issue. It's a survival issue. And for us, it would be a freedom issue if we're so dumbed down and so weakened, such weak people. And we are weak people now. I would say, I'm ahead of myself, but anyway, I would say that the United States today is a very weakened place. Canada is a very weakened place.
Yeah.
We are weak nations because we cannot stand up for ourselves. The white race. There's all this white nationalism, so on, talking about the white race and how great we are, how we need to survive. Well, we're getting less and less great all the time, and we're letting it happen.
Part of the international Jewish agenda, they say, is take us away from our ruggedness, to make us weaker. Like, there's lots of fat Americans. That's being promoted by design, you know. So they're trying to make us weaker as part of the Jewish agenda.
Look at these Americans. And the worse looking they are, I believe in fitness, the worse looking they are, the more we're supposed to cherish them. And the more retarded they are, the more we're supposed to cherish them, because they have love.
Yeah,
you know,
I was reading how
each other.
Yeah, I was reading how retarded babies, they don't want them aborted, but a normal functioning baby, they can abort that. But they say, well, retarded babies, they're kind of happy, so you shouldn't abort those. So that seems
right.
to be a Jewish agenda to try to ruin our general population. It's
happy.
Really, really
happy
dark.
Happy is the word. You know, they say, what, these people are so happy. They live happy lives. Well, they look like they live happy lives. They don't know. I taught in amongst special needs students a little bit, and you know, they just look happy because there's nothing going on. You know,
you can't really say that they're happy. Plus,
no.
It's an expense to the whole society to take care of them.
And then just throw this in here, because it comes up somewhere, I think. But you know, a sound mind in a sound body. If you don't have a sound mind, in I think what I've found in my life, you're not going to really have a sound body either, because the brain, the development of the brain, has everything to do with the development of the rest of the body. So you can't have a weak mind and a strong body. It just doesn't work, you know. Well, anyway, to go on. So the second choice, rather than to artificially restrict the number of births, is, well, he talks about a lot of things. I'm not really clear what that is, but mostly it's to let the sort of sort of the same, but what I took down was that he said, after he talked about that, which that didn't really connect with me too well, he went for a long time talking about things like, he said, a time, and this is, to me, is prophetic, because we're in that time right now. A time will come, came fast, even though in the distant future, where there can be only two alternatives, either, so he's saying in the distant future, distant at that time, he says distant, there will be only two alternatives. Either the world will be ruled according to our modern concept of democracy, in which case every decision will be in favor of the numerically larger races, or the world will be governed by the law of the natural distribution of power, and then those nations will succeed who possess a more brutal will, that's nature's way, and not the nations who have practiced self-restriction. So again, he's saying that what seems to people brutal would be that there'd be so many people, and the people have to fight it out among themselves if it comes to that. But what he's saying is that if you, as a lover of Germany, you want to be one of the nations that have a large enough population, or are large enough so that you're not going to be one of the ones that are going to be at the mercy of the larger nations. Because it's like what we talk about today, race war. I don't think we're close to that, but some people think so. But it's like there's this apocalypse idea, you know, that, and eventually in the future, it's going to lead to, because there's going to be too many people, not enough resources, and then we're going to all fight it out, and who's going to end up winning. Well, there's a lot of truth in this, you know. So he's saying Germans need to, in a sense, he's thinking Germans need to, this second one was about internal colonization, which I didn't quite get. I still don't get it. So what he means by that. So he's saying the slogan, internal colonization, is fatal because it encourages the belief that we have discovered a means that is in accordance with our innate pacifism, that you can, you know, stay peaceful forever, I guess, and not bother anybody, and nobody will bother you. I think that's kind of what it is in a broad sense. And he's saying this isn't going to work because in the future, it's going to be fought out like that, and nobody's going to be able to be left alone and remain free, you know.
Yeah, remember Hitler said to live is to fight, you know.
Oh,
because you're going to be attacked by a different side, so to live is to fight. That's kind of a meaningful statement.
So then, so he's saying this is a dangerous mentality. And he talks a lot about pacifism later on. That's really his word for what we don't want, what he doesn't want, and for people who think that they can hide their head in the sand, you know, and be left alone and they'll be okay, or that there could even be a pacifistic world where everybody gets along together. And this is part of the understanding of how nature operates.
So he's realistic about that. That's good.
Yeah, and so, but he does say here that among those who propagate this dangerous mentality in our people, the Jew is always first in line. And that's the only place where he mentions the Jew, or the first place in all this.
Talking about liberalism, right?
Yeah, we could call it that too, but he says that the Jew is always going to be there doing that. And he says he knows well that his softies are ready to be grateful victims of every swindle that promises them a gold brick in the shape of a discovery that will enable them to outwit nature and thus avoid the hard and inexorable struggle for existence. And, you know, and that's by doing nothing, they will just wait and see how things turn out. How true is that?
Yeah, a lot of people like that.
This is like, you know, always being promised something for nothing. You know, oh, well, if you do this, you know, then this will all work out. He knew it wouldn't. And he was saying this then. But he's criticized for things like that, you know, blaming the Jews, and also saying that people are, you know, that life is just an inexorable struggle for existence, and people can't learn to get along. Well, the answer to that is that nature is based on universal laws. Yeah, I had, you know, I come from thinking that universal law is like God, you know, another name for God. I mean, it's the nature of things, nature of the universe, how it works, how it operates. There's a way that life operates based on universal law and nature. It operates that way. It's not going to change. You know, we can't change it. You know, Hitler talks so many times about these do-gooders who think they can design life and society and so on better than nature can. But he said, you can't, and we won't, and not to believe that. So this is coming from there. And so then the third way to deal with a future starvation problem or not enough food problem would be to acquire new territory where this increasing population that he wanted.
Lebensraum, like the Ukraine.
Yeah. And the fourth one was to use industry and commerce to organize for export. And that has become a big exporting nation, which Germany is now, right? And that's how they survive, being so small now and having such a big population, that they have a big export market and they manufacture and so on. And and for those four things, he said that the last one was adopted. I think he would have been meant the pre-war monarchy, because he was saying this in 1925, that this is the one Germany adopted to become an export nation. And that's what caused the competition with England and the animosity from England, that we were becoming, you know, more successful and taking away some of their markets.
Yeah, of course, one of the causes of World War II, they're just jealous of Germany. England, France, Soviet Union didn't want a fourth power in Europe, right?
Right. And Hitler never wanted that. He never saw that as the answer. And he said it should have been the third one. He always had that territorial idea to increase Germany's territory. And he said things like to kind of make it sound good, like the German sword will be wielded to, no, the German plow will appear in these new areas after they have been gained by the German sword, and kind of inspiring, patriotic sounding things like that. But anyway, he said that's the answer. Oh. And he also commented
by the German sword. So it might have been through negotiation or invasion. What? How would he get the Ukraine? How would he get this Lebensraum?
In invasion, he said another place. I don't think I have that. I didn't think I copied that down, but it made such an impression on me. He said, and again, it's a controversial. I know it's controversial, but he said that he didn't think Providence or you know, the God or whatever had decided that some peoples should have 50% more land for their people than others, that the divisions of the borders were not set by heaven, you know, or by the gods, but by human beings and by the sword, you know.
He didn't say good point.
But what it is. And he said some countries, he was talking about Russia at this time, and he said some countries have too much. And when I thought about Russia, I thought, well, at that time, Russia's always had a huge bunch of land, and they had the Ukraine at that time, you know, and they don't have that many people, and they don't do that much with it. So
he, I guess that kind of makes sense. So you're saying, well, the Germans could spread out into the Ukraine.
That's what he wanted. He wanted the Germans to spread out, and he said Germans had been there before. There were already Germans there, and the Germans brought.
Maybe he could have negotiated it politically. Yeah. We'll never know, I guess.
Well, I think he was trying to do that, but they weren't, you know, he was trying to negotiate with Poland. And Poland had, that's a whole other topic, but you know, Poland was supported by Roosevelt, and Britain was pushed by Roosevelt to say no to anything the Germans wanted, because we need to understand that Roosevelt and his all those Jews behind him and others who weren't Jewish that were also, you know, influenced by all those Jews and didn't like Germany and were on the side of England and even on the side of Russia at that time. Russia, Soviet Union was very popular in the 20s and 30s. So they were against it. And when he saw that what they were doing to him, he invaded Poland, and that led then to the invasion of Soviet Union, and also the refusal of Churchill to cooperate with Germany in that. But anyway, so that was that. That's what he said there. And he brought up, of course, how nature works. Now, I want to talk about enemies for just a minute, because this is my thinking about this, you know, that oh, what was that part? Did I pass by that thing that you said? And I said, well, oh yeah, here, I left this out. Talking about the apocalypse in the future, you know. And but he said this so-called humanitarianism, which has taken over, which connotes only a mixture of stupidity, cowardice, and self-conceit, will melt away like snow under a March sun when that difficulty comes, you know, when they clash with one another, when there's not enough food, when there's not enough anything, and then and they're going to have a big you know, big war. And he said, man, that's what he says, and this is so famous, man has become great through perpetual struggle. In perpetual peace he must decline. And anyhow, I put that in
Wow,
quotes.
that's profound, eh?
This sums it up. Yes, it's incredibly profound, and it's so simple, and it might be translated slightly differently than Dalton has, but the meaning will be clear enough. So when he said that, it was because he recognized then that the whole theory of evolution is that, you know, what do you
The
think about
strong survive and the weak die off, so it keeps the gene pool strong.
this earth, how life came on this earth, through one thing fighting another. And even as we go, you know, up into more recent ages, where we have a lot of animals and things, and plants and everything living here, they eat one another. You know, they attack one another. They have their territories and so on. And the strong, even the weak have certain protections, like they have greater numbers maybe, and they have this or that, and they have great ability to produce more offspring, because a lot of them are eaten up by certain predators. And this is how nature designed it. And there's a line here, can't be, have to be right here, that I read, that Hitler wrote, I thought was just so great, that he said that nature, well, I'll just paraphrase it. He said, well, this is happening, and we humans say, oh, how terrible. Oh, we feel so bad. You know how people watch these nature shows, they used to, and see all the lions attacking the
The
grazing,
Giselles, yeah, I've seen that.
things like that.
It's
And
like might makes right, that's nature.
poor thing, you know. But he says, at things like that, nature looks on calmly and even with satisfaction at what is taking place. I thought that was just great.
Wow, yeah.
To nature, yeah, that's what's supposed to happen.
Well,
That's
it's natural for the lion to eat the gazelle. And I know the protocols of Zion, they kind of lie about equality, freedom, and fraternity, you know, but they say in reality, might makes right, you know. So they're acknowledging the same thing.
The protocols of Zion.
Yeah, the protocols of Zion, they're saying that. Not that might really makes right, but just realistically, might has the power and it exercises it in the world.
But you know,
Like with the lion and the Giselle example.
It doesn't mean that, you know, a stronger nation should go and, you know, decimate a weaker nation. It doesn't mean Hitler would have approved of that or whatever. But nature, he's saying this is how nature is set up. And because it is, and why nature looks with satisfaction on this, is that this creates the stronger to survive and the weaker to succumb. Now, it's not to say that never does a strong animal get eaten up by a, you know, a more vicious animal. But for the most part, it keeps things in balance. And those who, even when it comes to just natural deaths, those who are born, I might be talking too loud here. Those who are born in with, you know, with weaknesses, those who are born not strong with things wrong with them, if they die, that's what's supposed to happen, because nature can't control what goes on in the womb of every animal or, you know, person. I mean, things happen, and if you're not fit for life, you know that famous line they use against Hitler, you know, saying that he didn't believe everybody was fit for life. It's so terrible to say that and think that. Well, nature says if you're not fit for life, you know, it's better if you succumb so that the stronger ones carry on. And for this is for, the reason for this is that they're building a future of better and better, greater and greater, more evolved creation and, yeah, and higher consciousness. This is all. And we get short vision, short-sighted vision, and let emotions, let people stir our emotions and just, you know, and cause us to think that things are bad that are simply the way it is. And we don't have the strength of mind or the intelligence to see it, you know, far enough ahead to be able to see that and to be able to handle it.
Yeah, it's good to have a long view, and he had a long view. Yeah, my gosh. And
if you're a weak person, you're going to support weak people and feel sorry for them and not want anything, because you're afraid it'll happen to you. And this is what a lot of people who have these beliefs, and yeah, unfortunately Christianity encourages this. Not that I'm not promoting, and Hitler wasn't promoting, and the National Socialists were not this type of people who had no feeling for others and didn't care and just wanted to kill people.
Yeah,
that is not truth at all. Not truth at all. Hitler was a very compassionate man. I mean, an exceptionally compassionate man.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, he was. No question about it. We know how he felt toward animals, how peaceful he was with little animals and so on, and how kind he was to people, and how,
yeah,
compassionate he was with the people in his party and with Germans who lost family members and,
yeah,
so on, and how much he cared about the troops and how it hurt him, you know, that all these Germans died. But he then took the attitude, which he expresses a few times at times in table talk, that that's why Germans should continue to have high births. And then he said, we even needed to go to war every few generations. He was musing about that one time, you know, because it increases the birth rate. When we're at war, Germans will have more children because they're, you know, consider they might lose one or two,
yeah,
in battle. And so they have another one or maybe two more to ensure that they'll still have,
gosh,
some children.
Yeah, what a way to think, eh? Yeah.
But people don't like that. But you know that he's thinking that we have to go to war at times. We have to. See, now, here he's looking again at nature. Nature is, as we said, as this thing said, perpetual struggle. And of course, he called his book My Struggle.
Yeah. You know,
that life is struggle. Now, and if it's not, and it makes you strong, and it makes you better, and it makes you smarter. Why are people in the north known to have higher IQs than people far south?
Yeah, because they have to struggle to survive, get through the winters.
A lot to figure out how to survive, and you know, I recognize that I have had a very easy life, But I have a good intelligence, so therefore I'm not totally lost. But I have had an easy life. You know, my grandparents did not have an easy life, and they were great people. Well, they didn't live as long, but they did a lot. They worked hard. They were great people. My parents did not have such an easy life. They grew up, they experienced a depression, and they were the children of immigrants who my grandparents assimilated very well, but they were still immigrants. And my parents worked hard and had a very successful life. My sister and brother and I, we didn't do so well. We just kind of, we had it too easy. And I never really applied myself enough to anything because it was so easy for me.
Maybe I could say a similar thing. My parents were Dutch immigrants, came to Holland, you know, and I guess I had it pretty easy growing up.
Yeah, well, I don't know what your background is, but the only difficulties I had in my life were ones I made for myself, and I was real good at that. I was real good at getting myself into difficulties, and then
yeah, I know there's a Buddhist teaching saying 95% of your problems can be just dissolved because they're largely in your head, thinking about them, worrying about them.
Well, yeah, I remember your Buddhist mentality, Brian. So they are self-made mostly, but now Hitler had it hard. He had it hard, and he credits that with his being the strong person he became.
He said, cause for wisdom. Yeah, suffering can cause wisdom. Well, if people learn from it.
Struggle, and here we got to look at this. The evolutionary pattern is that it's not that is always a hard struggle. But you always have to be putting up a resistance to things. This is what I've been thinking about, you know, that there's there's things to resist. And if we don't resist, if we want to say, oh, we're going to have a peaceful world and we'll all be pacifists and nobody will hurt anybody, which is not going to be true, but they're going to do it psychologically now, you know. You know, then we can just take it easy. You know, we will decline. Absolutely, it's the word that's used here. We will decline. We will decay, and we will die. And what are people saying about our poor race, our poor white race, and even the German race in quotes? And, you know, it's all declining. We're dying. We're dying. And that's because the Jews have won over. The Jews have won over because we are not allowed to see that they're the problem, you know?
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. We can't see that they're the problem. It's kept hidden from us.
Well, it's not even hidden, but we can't say so. But a lot of people, they won't see it. They refuse to see it. But mostly it's because of political correctness that they won't see it.
I think that's one reason they want to keep emphasizing the Holocaust. So people won't look at what Hitler taught and what they accomplished, because he tells the truth about the international Jew, what the problem is. He explains everything so clearly and honestly. So they want people to say, you know, 6 million, 6 million, don't go there, don't look at this, because they don't want to see, you know, the basically his wisdom.
Well, right. And so, you know, Hitler, by teaching about the Jew and wanting Germans to understand that and holding fast on that the Jew is a problem, that's part of his spirituality, because it's part of what we learned about how nature works. And we have to live according to how nature works, you know? That's the way life is designed.
Yeah, I think the evil kind of works through the international Jews. If the good and evil on a spiritual level, a higher realm level, like, you know, the Satan or the devil, yeah, I think it is it's a higher realm or a spiritual issue.
Right, it is. And so my thinking about this is that, you know, we can, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of enemies. There's other enemies besides Jews, because we certainly had enemies before the Jews were so involved in our societies. But we were not dying out from these enemies like we are now. And because Jews have managed to take over the controls of our societies. Don't you think, how can we deny that? Who is in control of our societies? And how could we allow Jews to take over control of our societies?
We can allow it by not knowing it's happened. Yeah, it only works through secrecy, right?
We won't admit, like Hitler did, that they have cleverly managed to do this. Now, that he and his party had to figure that out, and they were not going to allow the Jews to do it. But the Jews were still in control everywhere else, and that was the reason that Germany was defeated.
Yeah, it's a shame. Like, he made his people Jew-wise understand the truth, but the British, Americans, and French, they were so brainwashed by the Jewish media and went along with it. So it's really a tragedy. Their own brothers, in a sense.
Yeah. So the lesson here is that to say this idea that it's being pushed all the time, that we want peace. Well, we do want peace. Hitler wanted peace. But they're forcing a kind of a peace through consensus, saying that like the United Nations, the idea of democracies, voting, you know, the majority rules. This is not how nature or the universe operates. See, it doesn't operate that way. There's,
you're right. God rules.
This consensus, this forced consensus. So in the end, the end takeaway is that there's no end to struggle in life. And I, you know, my own self is that I have wanted to think there was an end. You know, I've so often said, gosh, when do I get to rest? You know, how long do I have to keep doing this? And now that I am much closer to the end of my life, you know, but I sure feel like I have a lot of life in me still.
Oh, do you want to tell the audience how old you are? I wouldn't say.
No, I think they know I've said it enough. There's more now. I think, you know, I'm tired of doing this. Every so often, you know, I think, I don't want to do this anymore. This is too much work, you know, and why am I doing this? What I know is that the less I do, and I do a lot less than I used to, and I don't want to really move myself around as much. I don't exercise like I used to be able to do and work as hard or anything. But the less I do, the less I can do. And I know it's not good for me. And I should be pushing myself more to follow a regimen, an exercise regimen and so on. I do eat really well, but I spend more time just sitting. I like to just sit and work at the computer, you know, on the internet and so on. I like to do that more than, but it.
Yeah, I resemble that remark.
I get weaker. I could strengthen myself if I would, but it's like this struggle. And I realized that all my life I've wanted to sort of stop, you know. I quit. I'm famous for quitting jobs for no reason, just that I'm tired of them. I'm tired of doing this. I don't want to do this anymore. So I'm kind of a spoiled person. And when I hear that, you know, that there's no end to struggle in life, I believe it immediately. I know it's true.
Okay.
But I realize how much I've wanted to say, oh, no, really? You know, and then when do I stop? Well, I think now I have to face up to the fact that there is no stop. Even death doesn't stop it.
There is an end to the struggles when you reach nirvana. That could take thousands of lifetimes to reach full and complete enlightenment.
I believe that, Brian. And that, you know, I worked with that for a long time. Not totally. I didn't devote myself totally to it, but I was spending my time. And I thought, before I got into all this, 15 years ago or so, I thought, well, now when I retire, I'm going to just really go into this and go to nirvana. You know, I'm going to become enlightened. I thought, I'm doing so well with this, I think I could become enlightened because I thought I was close to it. Not that I lived my life in any kind of holy way, but I was really able to get in touch with things.
Kind of going the opposite end. I've been a Buddhist teacher for like 20 years, but now I'm getting more into historical revisionism, problems of international Jewry and stuff. I can't get more down to earth.
It happened the same when I thought I was going to, you know, end up in my life going to nirvana. I ended up getting involved with internet. I got a computer and started looking at things, and I got pulled into my my affiliation with Germanness. I'm really identified with Germanness. So I guess I can understand maybe why that Hitler was, why Hitler was,
yeah.
And people are, you know, that's my strongest identity, more than white, more than being white. I know I'm white and I like being around white people and I relate to white people, but more my biggest identity is German. And that's what I care about the most. And that's has taken
good
precedence over wanting to free myself from whatever and understand, because I have a lot of, I think it's fascinating, the world of the mind or the consciousness experience, you know, outside of this world. I've had a lot of interesting experiences. Maybe we'll talk about those someday. We can compare.
Yeah, yeah, I'm into the paranormal as well, sure.
Yeah. Fascinating as that is, I like you, it's strange. I just got into history and learned, because I never knew enough about history, and I just got, it just took hold, you know. And now I'm like, you know, I know all this, I understand all this. I'm getting tired of doing this work, but because anything that's a lot of effort, I have a tendency to want to pass over, you know, and not do.
Yeah.
But I know how good I feel when I do it and how much better it is. So that's an affirmation for that you have to keep some resistance going, and you have to meet resistance. You can't give in. You can't say, oh, well, I'm going to quit. You know, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Good German anything, work ethic, too.
You're not going to say, well, probably, but yeah, I'm. I like to work. I do like to work. So I have to be working at something. So that takes the brings us to chapters 10 and 11, which just is a little bit, but it's like more of the same, you know. It's
yeah.
more of the same, but talks more in terms of the sin against blood and race. That's chapter, and it's not chapter. It's in chapter 10. A section in chapter 10, the sin against blood and race. So there again is that's a part of his spirituality. It ties in. It's not separate. It's not say, well, this is materialism, blood and race, and then there's spiritualism talking about God or something. But it's all tied in together. Your spirituality, and you become a better race, a higher level, and but if you lose your blood, there makes you who you are, makes you the people that you are that have come so far, you know, along the evolutionary path.
Yeah.
You might say. Then you've thrown it away. You know,
yeah.
You've thrown it away. We all know that. When I first started, I would remember, you know, how I was caught up with my inner self. Not Carolyn Yeager,
yeah.
You know, that wasn't really Carolyn Yeager. I had this much greater self, which I do. No, I do. I know I
yeah.
do. And that was real, but now I'm focused. I got interested in Carolyn Yeager. And as I think, you know, you're saying the same thing. And I wanted to stick with Carolyn Yeager. And then I have one of my groups that I have learned so much from. Some people who do channeling that I don't really pay attention to anymore, but I learned it all, is they said that you come here into this world, you know, you project your consciousness, you know, and get a body and so on into this world because you want to, because it's so exciting, because there's so much to do, because it's the cutting edge. This world is really the cutting edge. So we don't really want to get lost in nirvana, although that's a different state. That's a valid state, I would say, probably. But so as long as you're here, you know, you pay attention to it and learn from it and do things and see where it goes. And don't worry about everything so much, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not worried about dying. When you die, you'll be back into that much greater consciousness of your higher self. combines not only me, but even other arts and so on.
Yeah.
So that made a lot of sense to me. But it's not, I think I just related to it. And this is why I can do this and still keep my spiritual understanding and not, I don't think I've lost anything. I think I could pick it all up and as I wanted to. So I know that it's all good, you know. It's all good, but in this life, this world is set up in a way that you have to keep active, you have to keep working towards something. I would say, I believe that life, that God is life, that the definition of God, the best definition I have of God is life, with a capital L.
Okay, sure.
Because any definition or any thought like this is only, you know, my partial idea, whatever. It's not everything. I have no idea what everything really is. I have no idea. How would I have any idea?
Yeah, nobody knows everything. Yeah.
But from what I've learned, and I'm pretty happy with it. Life has, you have to keep involved in life. You have to stay involved in life. And this is what Hitler meant too when he did talk about the Thule Society and so on. And he said he didn't appreciate people who wanted to die, you know, who wanted to leave this world. He thought if you were here, it vexed him, he said, you know, it vexed him that people, it would vex him if he knew that people didn't want to continue living.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And it kind of fits with that's why we come here. We come because we have the purpose of living a life, living our life, and it's not our total self. So he said, other things I want to say here is that, He did talk about the most highly developed people on Earth were the Aryan. He thought so. And then he said the greatness of the Aryan is not his intellect, but rather his willingness to devote all his faculties to the service of the community. And you know, that's his National Socialist belief system.
That's why it's such a good community, right? Yeah.
That the individual, he often said, like the individual is you as an individual, you are really nothing compared to the community. You know,
the individual needs and interest has to fit beneath the interest of the community. Yeah,
right. And so that's another big theme of his that I think relates to spirituality, because it relates to devotion to something, you know, greater. But in this case, it's your community, your nation, and you are, and this idealism that he says is so advanced in Aryans. He doesn't say that Aryans are people who are not willing to stand up for themselves, but he says that they do have all this idealism, which is, though, what makes us so special, and what makes us what he thinks is really the best, the most highly developed, because we combine this intelligence and intellect with idealism and the willingness to sacrifice. He says, were it not for idealism, all the faculties of the intellect would be nothing but intellect itself, never a creative force. So this creative force is very important, and this is what comes from our creator, whatever you want to call that. So when he says Jews don't have that, but we have it the most, and this is why we're so important, and we have to.
This is all in Table Talks, this section.
Yeah, we have to be. We have to take that responsibility and be great in the world, and not let ourselves be set aside, and you know, and that he really And of course, he talks, he really values the idea of a sacrifice. And he himself sacrificed everything for Germany, for the good of Germany, he did. And so this is the real Hitler, I think. This is Hitler's message. And this is what I think is spiritual, and it takes some understanding. We can't allow ourselves to listen to the critics who use these things to make him out to be a monster, which he was just considered that. So when people want to call him an avatar, that's not a bad thing at all, because he certainly was, you know, a great, great, highly developed man. He had to be a highly developed human being to have put all this together and convinced a whole nation, and even so many in the world look at us today still studying him and being inspired.
So true, hey?
Yeah.
Inspiration continues, yeah. So anything else on Nature versus Nurture by Adolf Hitler? That's quite thorough, that's good.
Well, that's the crux of what I had to bring here. How long have you been talking
about? Well, it's been about an hour and a quarter. I guess this has been a good length for the audience.
I give you a chance to say some things, we might discuss this a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking of again, I compared to the natural order, natural law, natural socialism. The Buddha said his teaching, the Dhamma, means natural truth, natural law. He's just teaching reality as it is. It wasn't like his idea. So I think there's a sympathy there between Buddhism and natural socialism. Actually, other Buddhists have told me that as well. That's why I'm really interested in that idea of harmony with nature.
I agree with you, Brian. I agree with you, because these people in those countries, they got this through experience. I mean, they experienced, they did the meditation, they did the quietness, they did the fasting. You know, fasting is a fabulous practice. It does amazing things for the mind. And they did all that, and they discovered their experience. They discovered this consciousness, and then they were able to talk about it and pass it on to their disciples. And so it's the same thing. It's the same thing as you discover how things work, how your mind works, how life operates. I call it life. I like to call it life, because so many of these words, I don't think they give the wrong impression.
Yeah.
So it's just, this is how life works. And we are a part of life here. And this is how we function. We have this consciousness, and we have this, and we have that. And it's not about coddling people, because look at these great holy men. Look what they gave. Look at all the sacrifice they went through. I'm so inspired by some of the things they do. And you know, my great, the one I like the best, Ramana Maharshi. I read about his life.
Good, yeah.
He was just a young teenager. He had this amazing experience out of the blue, that he was going to die, and he lay down to die, and he was so sure of it. And then he had all this stuff, and when it was over, he was not the same, and he wanted to go away and be a
What
do
yogi.
They call it? Yeah.
Or
word.
There's a renunciate. Yeah, I guess a Hindu renunciate, right?
To turn. Yeah, just to go and be a, you know, beggar or something, but not because he wanted to beg, but because he wanted to live. He wanted to live this. He wanted to investigate all this that he had learned. So, he had to run away from home. He finally ran away from home, and he lived out in some isolated place. Well, at first he was in an abandoned type of ashram or temple or something, and he ate nettles, and he didn't have anything else to eat. You know, he ate nettles, and he meditated, and he went from scratch to everything that he knew to being a, and he was enlightened. He was a totally enlightened person. And you know, I learned something. I think that enlightenment is kind of misunderstood.
From a Buddhist view, it's like the highest attainment, very rarely attained.
But it's also it's rare, but But it doesn't like change. It doesn't change everything in you. I mean, you reach enlightenment. You can be enlightened, and they still live in this world and talk to people and care about helping people. And I don't think it's just because they think everybody has to be enlightened, because they know it's not going to happen. I don't really know, because I can't speak for them. But I think that reaching a pretty high level, if you truly seek it and are willing to give up a lot, people can do it, because it's not like difficult. It just takes a lot of renunciation.
Yeah.
You know, and most of us, we can't renounce that much.
Yeah. I guess that's a big spiritual topic. Yeah, a lot of Buddhism talks a lot about that.
Don't have to either. Maybe we're, you know,
yeah,
aren't meant. But I think also that it's very compatible with Hitler's life views. Maybe not with National Socialism. That's a little bit different. But Hitler's view. But that doesn't mean that he was a Hindu, or he was a
he's a Buddhist.
Any of that. It's just truth. To me, it's just truth. And you can come at it, shows you can come at it from a Western perspective as well as an Eastern perspective and traditions.
You know, I was reading how the Green Party, they even credit their foundation with the SS and National Socialist Germany. You know, their environmental ethics come from Germany, because, you know, they're the first to, you know, protect the rights of animals and so forth.
Yeah, and they did. Do they credit Hitler with that? No, they don't.
The Green Party does acknowledge, at least the SS within National Socialist Germany is their root. Green Party has said that.
They don't support any of that now. They're very vehemently communist-like.
But they admit that, as their foundation.
You know, when I first started out, there was a Green National Socialist Party. I don't know what it's called, Green, something like that. When they used the color green. And environmental, you know, Green Environmental National Socialist website. And I knew somebody who was one of them, at that time, who was one of the main people on that. And I read a lot of it. And it just so surprised me so much, because I never heard of that, you know. And I thought, well, you know, these people call themselves something else, but they like National Socialism, and they use that.
I remember during National Socialism, Hermann Goering once put a fellow, used a frog for bait, and he put him in jail for 6 months for killing the frog. Because they were so protective of animals.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the National Socialists seem to have had an idea that they had to be very, very strict with people in order to get these ideas accepted or something, or to show that they were serious. I don't know, because some of the things that they did, the way they punished Germans, maybe I've got that feeling sorry for myself attitude and feeling sorry for people in me. I'm sure I do. But I thought, well, that is too harsh for these people.
Yeah, just make an example of that one case,
Like the ones that they put to death in the war because they took some money from a Jew or something, you know, and they weren't supposed to. Well, they would just be very, very strict on that and actually give them the death penalty, which I shocked me when I came across.
Even their own soldiers, they would execute their own soldiers. Yeah.
Oh, that's why.
So that's high discipline,
That, but they were like, wanted to show that they meant business, and it was for preventiveness, and it's very similar to what I've been talking about, the idea of nature, not feeling any, following its laws, no matter what, not say, oh, well, we'll let you go, we'll save you from this. Nature doesn't save anybody from anything.
Yeah. And think of the conflict like in Buddhism. In Buddhism, you can't kill, but you don't have to artificially keep a person alive, you know. That's not necessary from a Buddhist view, but we're not allowed to kill. So, I guess there might be a difference in view there with National Socialism, like just who would naturally survive and who wouldn't.
National Socialism didn't want to kill people. They wanted to sterilize people. To keep people who shouldn't, who had very bad genes, very bad heredity, from having children. So that wasn't going to take so much away from them. Because
that's
a lot
not
of
killing.
People,
from Buddhist view, that's not killing. That's true.
They're killing, and that's perfectly okay, right? It's okay to kill that because it's in their body, and they can kill anything that's in their body. So you can always just get around things the way you want to get around them. But Hitler didn't want to kill anything. In war, you have to kill, you know. And he, now there, let's go to, one of the, his real dislikes was pacifism.
He
thought war was not something that you could do without, that, you know, was going to be done without, that you could, you had to defend yourself.
Yeah, different rules in war. You have to kill in a war, yes.
Yeah. And so that didn't mean that. And he didn't like pacifism. You know, I think about Ernst Sundel whenever I read that. And Ernst Sundel said he was a pacifist. And, of course, he was born the same year I was, actually. So there's my age.
But okay.
He was born
76.
There. He was born in, that's right. He was born in Germany, towards, in, then when he was 4 or 5 years old, the war ended.
Yeah.
And so he got all that treatment, you know. And then later he learned how good the National Socialists were. But even though he was a pacifist, he fought for Germans in Germany and in his revisionism, you know, he stood up for Germans and for Germany. And in one line in Mein Kampf there that I don't think I have here, but I don't want to have to hunt for it, is that Hitler said of that pacifists, I think I quoted that somewhere else, pacifists will never stand up for their community and their nation and fight for it. You know, they won't fight for their own people.
Good point, Dane. Good point.
But that's not really true of Sundel, because he did fight and sacrificed a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though he says he's a pacifist.
Yeah. In that sense, he wasn't really a pacifist. Yeah.
No. Probably not. Probably not. Anyway, I've got a little bit of this on my website under.
We should tell the audience your website, you know, and how to find you, and also your book.
Yeah.
Where to get it, the Barnes Review.
For a minute while I look for this.
Yep.
Yeah, the book is.
Show the audience the book again.
The
recent book.
Yeah, we're just getting ready to have deliver the second edition of the book.
Okay. I've got the first edition. Barnes Review sent to me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's there's just a few little changes. It's upgraded as far as paper quality. It has good quality paper already, but I wanted better. And it's got a heavier cover. It's a little bit heavier, and it's got a few corrections in it, and so on. But it's basically no different than the one you've got. So that's what's going on with that book, and I have.
And your website, I think, is carolynyeager.net.
Net.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I would really encourage people to at least read these posts I'm putting up.
Yeah.
That, like the recent one, I'm doing them here and there. The recent one is the section, short section that he wrote on defects in our educational system.
Mm-hmm.
And the one, and the also concentration on a single enemy. Now, I'm posting passages that I think are really worthwhile, and I even cut out a few lines here and there that seem a little bit repetitive or something, just so that they're not too long and people will get the message. But he says that that the educational system that was that was in Germany when he was growing up and before, was at fault for Germans and German Austrians to not having a strong sense of the countries not having a strong sense of national determination, especially in German Austria.
Was this because Hitler who said this, you're saying?
It's in Mein Kampf.
Oh, okay.
That for that reason is because of the educational system didn't educate young Germans to be a pride in their German nationality. And he says that they've always been given always been trained to look at it objectively, to look at your own nationality objectively, but concepts, abstract concepts such as democracy or international socialism, which is the opposite of his socialism, or pacifism, he uses those examples, are taught in a subjective way so that people get the feeling for them, you know, and have their feeling for it is important. But when it comes to their nationality, the feeling is being wiped out so that they just are able to look at it and say, well, is this being done right or is this being done wrong? So that they can be critical of their own nation. And here's where he says that the pacifist will never take his stand in the ranks of his own people and fight for them from the sheer instinct of self-preservation. But he says the other nationalities will do that, and that needs to be changed. And he did change that under National Socialism.
That's an important point he's making. Yeah, that's important.
Yeah, see, and then he's criticized for that too. Everything good he did that was good for Germany and Germans and really good for the world, to other people to follow and learn from, he's criticized for as it being very, very bad.
Well, it's because we've been lied to and lied to and lied to by Adolf Hitler all of our lives. Like it was the opposite of what we've been told. Like they said, he was the most evil person in 1,000 years, but really he was the greatest leader in 1,000 years.
I know. And when I read that still today, I'm just like, it just kind of shocks me. I think, can they still be saying that? You know, can anybody still want to read this?
You
know,
well, you and I are in a minority, right? The majority of people out there, probably 80-90%, just think, oh, he was evil, you know? Yeah, I think of in the bigger picture relating to the international Jew. Like, I have a series called How We're Losing to the International Jews. That maybe we do another video on that, on how, you know, we think everyone's waking up, the movements, the internets, but really, the Jews have really planned out their attack on us, and they're taking advantage of us, and they're dumbing us down. And we should you know, realistically consider, you know, how we're losing, or how they're working, how they're gaining on us, and just assess it rather than just being positive all the time that we're going to win this thing. And just saying that, we should just realistically assess what is the situation.
Well, Brian, I think we can learn the answer to this from Adolf Hitler. And from all the things he wrote and said, but even in Mein Kampf, because we need a leader. And he knew that the Germans needed leadership, and he volunteered himself. But like, that's not something that I have always had excuses. I was too old already, you know, 12 years ago, and I'm a woman and this and that, you know, so, you know,
well,
I can't.
I appreciate what you said on our last video on Revolution Radio when we had the two callers. You know, we're saying how our leader hasn't really risen up in the world. And you said, well, we do have a leader. He's Adolf Hitler. And that really stuck with me. Yeah, you know, we do have his example. We do have the history of what actually was accomplished. In a sense, he is the leader. Just the way Christians can point to Jesus, well, we have this, you know. We still have Adolf Hitler. So I really appreciate you saying that in our previous video, you know.
Well, I appreciate that you picked up on that, because you notice these guys didn't. And this one guy said right away, oh, no, that would never work because he's been too demonized.
Well, I think one of them did respond to the idea, yeah, realize at least we have that example, you know.
Yeah, but he didn't think it would work because Hitler was too demonized. And who's demonizing him? He says Alex Jones. Now, I liked these callers, this Frank especially. I liked him. He added a lot. But then he brought up Alex Jones. I think it was him. And as though if Alex Jones is talking against Hitler, we can't use him. I didn't get that at all. That just threw me for a loop.
Yeah, so, I think the way you put it is that that's kind of what defeatist thinking. We should still work with Hitler. Like, we should try to reform his reputation. Even if it takes us a century or three centuries, like the early Christians, it took them like till 325 AD to get really established at the Council of Nicaea. So yeah, that's a part of my idea, my Thule Society, just to patiently keep that torch alive into the future. Because he is the example, and we should work on reforming that example. And like you say, we don't have to be defeatist about it, because we do have truth on our side.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is the best thing we've got going, but there's tremendous antagonism toward it. Not, from main people, and they're supposed to be main people in the white nationalist movement. So, I think that's our problem. We are not united, and we don't have somebody to lead, and we have to figure out, how do we figure out how to utilize Hitler in this way? Well, I'm doing what I'm doing right now, but see, that's all I do is on my website, and that
Yeah.
doesn't reach that many
Well,
people.
maybe we should do another video on this. Like, this is a video on Hitler's teachings on the nature of nature, but maybe we should do another talk on that sometime. Give that some thought, you know?
Yeah, because he says a lot about, and I have some of it in some of these little, in these posts I've made on that are on the importance of the spoken word, on connecting with the mass, how important that is, all kinds of advice he gives on leadership and reaching the people. And we're not utilizing that because we're all on the internet now, and people say, well, we're in the internet age, so we don't need to do those things. I think we need to do both.
Yeah, well, spoken word is on the internet like this, but yeah, we should do a video on leadership, how Hitler can be is like the leader, and how we can cultivate that more, and also how we're losing to the international Jews as well, what they're doing. Yeah, we could talk about more of that later, you know?
Yeah, I'm willing to do that. That sounds good.
Because maybe we should wrap up now, just for the audience. It's been over an hour and a half. You know, these
Yes.
long videos can intimidate people.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, any last words, Carolyn? This has been a good talk. I've
No,
appreciated.
I've said everything and then more, so even my website and everything. So I just thank you for the opportunity, Brian, and look forward to talking to you
Yeah, this
again.
is our fifth video. I really appreciate, you know, tapping into your knowledge, Carolyn. So thank you very much for being on the show.
You're welcome. Good night.
Okay, let's see you next time. These videos are dependent upon listener support, so please donate at the link below. Please like and subscribe, and share these videos with your friends, and you can copy them wherever you like.